Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to episode 151 of Geek Town Radio. We're back this week with Bex.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. I've got used to a slightly different lifestyle over the last week or so, having been on the Isle of Skye, up in Scotland, in the middle of absolute nowhere. London seems a little bit crowded again now, I have to say.
Yes, you really, really couldn't find two places which were too much different, I wouldn't have thought, in the UK from the Isle of Skye and Central London. So how was the Isle of Skye, apart from not having great internet access? How was it?
It was awesome. It was beautiful, and just, it was like walking around a combination of leftover set pieces for like The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones, and because just I went to so many castles. It's just, I don't get bored of castles, I have to say. I just like to stand on top of them and survey the area and kind of plan world domination, which was amazing. And it's so beautiful up there as well. And we had, because it's Scotland, it's mixed weather. We had a brilliant mix of sun and rain on one of the days. So I've got photos of like castles with giant rainbows behind them.
How awesome.
It just looks like CGI, you know? I might
brilliant.
As well have just not taken any photos and come back and done some CGI, because it looks lovely. And I took my lightsaber with me.
Of course, yes.
So I done some filming of me wielding my lightsaber like on castles.
So if you're hanging around castles, you need like a full Khaleesi outfit.
I was just wearing all the clothes I owned in the world, to be honest, because it's Scotland. It was like, I have to do this. I have to take the lightsaber and stand on the edge of a cliff and stand by a castle and do these kind of things, because it was just absolutely awesome. Very windy. There's one point where I was on the edge of a cliff and the drop was just phenomenal, and I'm kind of standing there and every now and then the wind moves me slightly and I'm just like, don't die. This is a really cool shot, but I'm not cool enough to die for.
Yeah, killing yourself over photography is not a good idea.
Yeah, well, the camera fell over on the tripod at one point, so I might need a new lens.
Oh no!
It landed in mud, which obviously means it didn't all smash, but there's going to be particles that will have got into the mechanism of the lens. So there was a 60 quid video shot that.
Oh god!
It worked for a bit longer, but eventually, I suspect there will be repercussions.
Yes.
And I was just far enough away from the tripod that I saw it going and just kind of went, yeah, in slow motion.
Yeah, I had this vision of a slow motion shot of you running towards it.
Yeah, me holding a lightsaber running towards a falling tripod. And then because it's a beautiful spot up the top of a cliff, there's all these other pro photographers just looking on with sympathy. As my kit just goes smash. At least it didn't go off the cliff.
Oh dear. Were you recording video at the time? Because that would be a great video to put up.
I'd stopped and I was just resetting up the shot. So sadly, the video of the camera going poof, is not in existence. I think otherwise it would have been included in the video otherwise, because it would have been quite entertaining. It was awesome and beautiful. We had fireplaces in our cottage where we were all staying, and I used the evenings where we couldn't go anywhere or do anything to catch up with rewatching Legion series 1 in preparation for series 2.
Ah, yes. such a good show, that. I'm very happy that's back.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. And so I sort of settled down with some hot soup in front of an open fire and watched reruns of Legion on my laptop in the evenings. So that was pretty cool, a pretty good escape. Other than that, I watched a bit of Gotham.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I was sent the most recent two episodes from the States as part of a review thing. I haven't watched it in ages, and it's quite crazy.
Yeah, it's one of those shows that... It took the first season for them to find their feet, but once they'd sort of settled into what they were doing and decided to hell with any form of continuity or with all the other DC universe and created its own thing, once it decided it was doing that, it got a lot better and it gets more nuts as you go through it.
Yeah, that's what I was discovering, because I've jumped into the middle of a season. I'm trying to remember which episodes I watched, but I think the States is quite ahead of the UK.
Yeah, it is.
So I've just seen, I think it was episodes 11 and 12 or something of a new season out there, and I was just like, I hardly even know what's going on. Every character has changed and got crazier, and it looks like they're on their third actress for Ivy, and
yeah,
just it's just stuff. Every scene was just, I was just like, well, this is wildly entertaining. I'm not sure half of it makes sense, and it definitely is not really an adaptation of anything Batman at all at this point. It's just absolutely ridiculous. But it was quite entertaining, so I might have to go back and do a catch up and watch season 3 and the rest of the season 4 that I've not seen when that comes out over here, which is reasonably soon, isn't it? That it's coming out over here.
That was one of the big announcements this week, actually, was because seasons 1 to 3 are on Netflix. Season 4 has been bought by E4, which is coming in April. We don't know exactly when in April yet, but it is coming in April, they announced this week, on E4, which I'm incredibly happy about. That's really where it should have been in the first place. It should never have been on Channel 5. But I'm very happy.
Yeah, other than that, I'm trying to think what else. I did a video on Jedi Challenges, the augmented reality Star Wars game.
Yes, I saw that.
I just left in all the shots where I fell over because I thought...
Yeah, they were highly entertaining.
I foolishly put a sofa in my studio so I could sit down and do reviews and it would all look at it, and then kind of forgot it was there and fell over at least twice when backing away from enemies that obviously you move with them when you're playing it on a headset game. Walking away from them doesn't actually do anything.
Yes.
I left the shots of me falling over because I thought, why not? And I decided to sneak some things in the background of that video as well. There are some porgs. I don't know if you spotted them.
I did spot the pugs, yes.
I thought, why not? But yeah, I mean, between all those things, that's kept me pretty busy, to be honest. What have you been up to?
Well, I mean, I've working through various shows. The big new one that I started this week, although I've only got a few episodes into it, is Sneaky Pete, which is brilliant. If you haven't seen that, it's on Amazon Prime Video. Second season of that is out now. Picks up pretty much where the first season left off, because there was a little sort of coda bit at the end of the first season where Marius, who is pretending to be Pete, the entire premise of the show is basically this guy Marius gets out of prison, needs to hide from Bryan Cranston, who is a gangster that's chasing him, and basically steals the life of his cellmate, who is estranged from his family. So he turns up on the family's doorstep saying, "Hi, I'm Pete, your nephew, who you haven't seen in 20 years." So that was the sort of premise for the first season. That first season has a little coda bit at the end, which, mild spoilers, but leads into the second season, which is Marius getting caught by two guys who believe he's Pete, who are after a bunch of money that Pete and his mother have apparently hidden somewhere, which Marius has no clue about. So this results in them having to try and spring the real Pete out of prison. just so they can find out this information. So it's brilliant. It's so well written. It was backed by Bryan Cranston. He's an exec producer on it, although he hasn't shown up in the second season so far. I don't know whether he will at some point, but he was sort of the villain in the first season, but wasn't sort of a main character. The main character is Giovanni Ribisi, who plays Pete / Marius. But it's one of the best things on Amazon. It's one of the best TV shows I've seen in a very long time, actually, but it's well worth going to watch if you've not caught that. I also completed Jessica Jones season 2, which I thoroughly enjoyed. enjoyed. Very interesting, different sort of season, because there isn't as strong a bad guy like Kilgrave as there was in the first season. The bad guy is almost Jessica herself in terms of her own psyche and her dealing with the fallout of how she became who she was and that sort of thing. That was quite an interesting season. I quite enjoyed that. Have you seen that yet?
I watched the first two episodes of Jessica Jones season two. I've only seen a sort of half of the first season as well, and I can't quite get into it. I think it's probably a very good example of what it is and being a drama and looking at her mind state and all of these kind of things. But it, when it is and it isn't a genre show, it occupies a slightly unusual kind of space, and
yeah,
I think I actually have to be in the right mood to watch it. I'm just not quite there. There's a little bit too much of the drama type side of it,
right,
for me. So I find myself occasionally like wanting to fast forward bits. It's on the kind of maybe list for me, but I know a lot of people who absolutely love it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was one of the strongest seasons out of that first run, but it is a little less superhero-y than the others. It's not sort of as out and out superhero-y. It's detective drama about this damaged person. It's not as much about her being a superhero, although obviously that is part of it.
You could take out the superhero stuff and replace it with something else quite easily, I feel, and it would still work. It's almost like it's a series that wants to appeal to people who aren't into that kind of thing, to sort of pull them in a bit, rather than something aimed at the comic book fans looking for something along those lines. It's much more... I don't know, it seems very weird to call something based on a comic book kind of realistic drama, but it's much more that approach to it. And the other stuff's more of kind of a background, which I always find a little bit frustrating when I see things like that, where the bit that's kind of hooked me in is actually more of a, just a setup of background. And then it's just more of a, albeit very, you know, well-acted or well-written drama. I mean, again, I've only seen a couple of episodes, but it's much more that, with just a kind of slight background veneer of the comic booky stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth trying again and getting a bit further than two episodes in, particularly just for Kilgrave, because David Tennant is phenomenal in that first season.
I love David Tennant as well. So I'm not sure why I haven't quite, you know, managed to get through it. But I did find it a little bit with all of these Netflix series is that it's like, I really loved Daredevil, but I did find there was too much of the kind of standard drama stuff, and I actually found Daredevil himself to be the less interesting of the characters.
Yeah.
So I did really enjoy bits of the series, but the weighting of how they kind of balance things, just, it just isn't quite what I'm looking for, even though parts of it were amazing. I was more interested in the other characters than the primary character, and that kind of, I think that would be the same with Jessica Jones. I would be more kind of just waiting for David Tennant to come on screen, which doesn't really seem to be a fair way to be watching or judging something.
No, I know what you mean. It's the same with a lot of those Marvel Netflix things. They are far more character driven and sort of play down the superhero-ness as opposed to something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or the other sort of network Marvel TV shows, which play up the superhero stuff a lot more.
Yeah, it's weird because there's other things which have no superhero type. It's, you know, the shows I watch that aren't genre shows, because there are some of them, as I have to assure you every now and again. Something like Banshee.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Banshee? I love Banshee. That's incredible. But I think that's quite darker.
Yeah.
And that has, the characters are, see, I would say a lot more complicated than Jessica Jones. It's pretty complicated. But I think Banshee has a lot more characters who are all equally complicated and nuanced and do unexpected things.
Yeah.
And I have no expectations going into it, so I can sort of enjoy that more than I can with these ones.
It's a mislabeling of maybe the Marvel shows, where they sort of say they're superhero shows and they're not as much superheroes, whereas Banshee, you know, it's not a superhero show going into it, I guess.
Yeah, it's also just an absolutely incredible show. If you haven't
watched it, I highly recommend it
because it is incredibly, incredibly well put together. And one I only kind of watched because someone else wanted to watch an episode of it when they were staying around my place for a bit, and they wanted to watch an episode of it. And I was just kind of like, what on earth is this? If you tell me the premise of it, oh, it's a guy that is pretending to be the sheriff of a small sleepy town.
Yeah.
You know, who's an ex-criminal and there's some diamonds involved. I would have been like, that sounds awful.
Yeah.
But it's actually, you know, an unbelievable show. It became one of my favourite TV shows for a bit.
Yeah, it's a very good series. In terms of gaming and stuff this week, I've been playing around with Pure Farming, which is completely not really my sort of game, but somebody offered me a preview code for it, so I thought I'd give it a go. Now, you had a go with, was it Total Farming when we were at PC Gamer Weekender?
Yeah, I got to interview one of the guys. I think it was Re- Real Farming.
Real Farming, that's it, yes.
It might have been. Lovely guys. Yeah, slightly outside my area.
Yeah.
The amazing new DLC of Potato Patch or whatever it's called, Potato Crop. I know that there's a massive audience for these and people find them just kind of nice escapism and things.
Yeah.
I tend to prefer my games to be more chaotic and explodey and realistic.
So I've been playing with Real Farming. I mean, the problem is I don't really have, apart from, you know, having played a little bit of Real Farmer when we're at the show, I don't really have a lot to compare it to. So I couldn't tell you whether it's any better or any worse than any other farming game out there. I mean, it does what it seems to do perfectly well. You can pick up farming gear, you could go out and plow fields, you could sit back in a tractor and listen to the radio while you're plowing fields. It is that sort of cerebral kind of just relax and not have to worry too much, and you know, I don't really know whether it's for me, but yeah, it seems to be a perfectly solid version of that sort of genre, for what I can tell of it. The other big game that I've been playing is called Surviving Mars, which is from Paradox. It's another one of these base building games, you know, a sort of SimCity but set on Mars kind of thing, where you build biodomes and stuff and populate them with people, and you've got to try and keep everybody alive. It's one of those games that you think, oh, I'll just play this for an hour at sort of 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and you look up at the clock and it's just like midnight. It really gets you sort of sucked into to just messing around and building out bigger bases and adding more stuff to it and just trying to keep everybody alive. I get the feeling it's not quite as deep as I would like it. I mean, I've been playing, I don't know, 10 hours or so, and I have a feeling it's probably not one that's I'm going to come back to as much as, say, something like Civilization or other games of this genre that are also sort of base building games. They, you know, the goals don't seem particularly well set out with it, but it is fun to play, you know, and it's if you like building things, which I do, I love building games. So that's been quite good fun. The other thing that came out this week, of course, was two massive Marvel trailers, Avengers and Deadpool. I'm assuming you've seen both of these.
Well, yes. Even up in the, you know, the Highlands of Scotland, you find just enough 4G somewhere on top of a mountain in order to watch these things.
Yes. What were your thoughts?
I'm greatly looking forward to both. I mean, I think the Deadpool trailer could be anything. It could have just been like static and it said there will be Deadpool and I'd probably be happy. So I don't really feel like I can give any kind of constructive criticism because it exists, so I'm happy. And in Infinity War, I'm interested to see what it's going to be like, because the Marvel films, just the tone of them, because I, you know, I watched Ragnarok so late, I only watched that a few weeks ago.
Right, yeah.
And the tone in it was so mixed and bizarre. It was like half a Thor film and half a Guardians of the Galaxy film. And
yeah,
I'm not quite sure what to expect, really. And the trailers don't give you enough of a deep sense of what the characterization and what the directing style is going to be, really. I'm unsure what it's going to be, but I suspect it will be spectacular to look at either way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be more in the vein of Civil War, given it's the same directors. I suspect that you're going to end up losing quite a lot of people, or at least some key people, out of this one, whether that's Captain America or whether that's Iron Man, or I don't know, but I suspect you are going to be losing some people in this.
A few people are coming to the end of their contracts or have said that they'd like to go off and do other things at this point. Plus, it's just too many characters otherwise. It would be
something like 40 films
or something.
Yeah. We are going to end up losing some people. That's pretty much guaranteed. It wouldn't surprise me if Vision ends up going, because the poor chap has an Infinity Stone in his head. So I think Vision may very well be a goner. And Loki appears to have one stone, and we've seen that stone in the Gauntlet, so that probably doesn't bode well for Loki, I wouldn't have thought.
I think Loki would just gift wrap the stone and hand it to him, because he's got too much of a survival instinct to try and keep hold of something from someone that can clearly utterly squash him.
Yeah, so I
suspect he's just going to swap sides. I mean, he was quite happy for the first Avengers to just be like, okay, you can help me, you let me keep this planet, you can have everything else. Yeah, sure. Oh, I know. He's very much swap sides as needed.
Yes, that is very true. So yeah, the Deadpool trailer, the official plot synopsis, I pretty much takes exactly what you said, as people don't really care what the story is about or anything. I mean, we know it's got some of the X-Force in it, but the official plot synopsis is, after surviving a near-fatal bovine attack, a disfigured cafeteria chef, Wade Wilson, struggles to fulfill his dream of becoming Mayberry's hottest bartender while also learning to cope with the loss of a sense of taste. And it continues like that. It's. I mean, you know, it bears no resemblance to that. That is actually the official plot synopsis as well. It's ridiculous. But yes, that's coming on the 16th of May for that, for Deadpool. I'm very much looking forward to that. Infinity War is 26th of April.
Coming out around my birthday, Deadpool. And Batman Ninja comes out on my birthday.
Very good. Very good.
I feel like they're taking me into account with their scheduling.
Good. The other thing I've seen this week, actually, is I went and saw Black Panther finally, which I've been meaning to get around to going to see and have only just got to it. Have you watched this yet?
I watched it as soon as it came out. Yeah, I was in one of the first screenings.
It's interesting because... I mean, I don't know what you thought of it. I mean, I enjoyed it. It's difficult with a movie like this because it's been so hyped as to what exactly to expect, because it's never going to live up to the amount of hype that it has, I don't think. But I don't know, what do you think of it?
I really enjoyed it.
I thought it was a good, solid addition to the Marvel Universe. It slightly disappointed me that it basically gets to the end and falls into the trap of having two equally powered people beating the hell out of each other, which is
In near-matching suits.
Near-matching suits, which is slightly lazy writing to me. There are more interesting ways of ending things. And I thought we got away from that. You know, there's been a lot of... It's the way that a lot of films of this type used to end about 5 years ago, and I'd hope we got away from that. So that
we had Logan did the same thing as well.
Yeah, it sort of skirted around it a little bit, and you did have another battle going on, but there is that slightly bothered me. Considering comparing this to the amount of sort of hype that it got. I mean, it's one of those films that I would definitely say go and see it. I thought it was very good. I think it's he's a great addition to the world. I love Wakanda. I think Wakanda's a really interesting concept in terms of this sort of, you know, very powerful African nation that's had to keep itself hidden from the world. I thought that was really interesting. I thought the acting was great. I thought Danai Gurira, I thought, was brilliant as well. And it's a really solid cast. I don't know. I just feel odd about it because all these reports coming out about it's the best thing ever. It's the best Marvel film ever made. And I would disagree with. I think it's a very good Marvel film, but I certainly think there are a number of other Marvel films that I enjoyed more than it.
I think for me, like, there are a lot of comic book films and a lot of comic books that use the good versus bad version of the same character thing, but Black Panther handled it a lot better, and it's more, I think, you know, maybe didn't sit so well with you because it's such a cliche now, but I felt that because the two characters, their entire lives are mirroring each other, and through the film there is this good and different version of the same kind of path in life, that they could have grown up to be the same person, but the where their lives have divulged has made them into sort of not complete opposites, because both have good and bad admirable qualities in the bad guys, so to speak, for the most part, apart from the other bad guy who was just a cardboard cutout. But everyone else had good and bad qualities. So I think maybe if it wasn't such a ridiculous cliche to have the two characters fighting like that, it wouldn't have, you know, left you with that kind of feeling quite as much.
Yeah, maybe that's the case. Maybe I'm judging it. Again, part of me feels I might be judging it harshly because of the hype around it, which is a little unfair.
It's also a film that has pulled in non-comic book fans, so things we think are really cliche might have been much fresher to quite a lot of the people who are part of that hype machine that you were kind of aware of when you went in to see it. So I think that makes quite a bit of a difference too. I'm never a fan of good versus bad version of the same character, but I kind of gave Black Panther a bit of a plus because it did it very well, and because the audience was slightly different to a lot of the other Marvel films, I think.
Maybe that's it. I you know, like I say, I would say go and see it because I think it is a solid Marvel movie. I just temper your expectations in terms of it being the best thing that you've ever ever seen. If it is, great. But it might not be. So judge that however you will, I think, is probably the way I take. So other things, obviously, last week, MCM Comic Comedy Birmingham, I just wanted to mention that there's videos up with a bunch of people. Some of the interviews we put on last week's show with Sean Gunn, Michael Rooker and Mark Shepherd. There is also videos up with Troy Baker and Nolan North. Jan Chappelle, who was Callie in Blake 7, for those of you old enough to remember that show. Yes. So she was great, actually. She was lovely. It was a fairly short interview, that, but she came in and talked to us for about 7 or 8 minutes. That was really nice. And if on the Instagram feed, there's a bunch of sort of little video clips and photos and all that sort of stuff as well. If you're a cosplayer, by the way, and you had your photo taken by me and you're up on the website, just get in touch if you want any of the photographs, because I'm quite happy to send them to you. The last thing we have this week is Ready Player One is, of course, arriving later this week. Originally, Gray was going to come on and do a bit of a review on here, but he couldn't make it this week, so he's going to come on next week. However, if you go online, you can see his incredibly positive review of Ready Player One. He was incredibly happy when he went to go and see it, because we sent him to a preview, and without telling anybody, Spielberg popped up on stage.
Oh, wow. I'm even more jealous now. I was jealous when I knew he was going to get to see it before everyone else. Now I'm even more jealous.
Spielberg, Ty Sheridan, and one of the other actors, I can't remember which one, but like three of them kind of popped up on stage. Ben Mendelsohn, I think. So the three of them were up on stage, and they hadn't sort of told us they were going to do that. So he got to go and see it. He absolutely loved the film. In preparation for the film coming out, they've sent us a little audio trailer to go with it. So here's what to look forward to on Ready Player One. It is out on Thursday, Friday this week, although you imagine you'll find some previews on Wednesday night as well. But it looks like definitely somebody, if you're into sort of nostalgic 80s and 90s memorabilia, I think definitely want to go and look out for. But here's a little of what to expect on Ready Player One, and then we'll move on to some TV news.
My name's Wade Watts. My dad picked that name because it sounded like a superhero's alter ego, like Peter Parker or Bruce Banner. But he died when I was a kid. My mom too. And I ended up here. Sitting here in my tiny corner of nowhere. There's nowhere left to go. Nowhere. Except the Oasis. A whole virtual universe. People come to the Oasis for all the things they can do. But they stay because of all the things they can be.
Can you feel this?
Yeah. It's the only place that feels like I mean anything. The Oasis was the brainchild of James Halliday.
Hello. If you're watching this, I'm dead. I created a hidden object, an Easter egg. The first person to find the egg will inherit $500 billion and total control of the Oasis itself.
Who is this Parzival, and how the hell is he winning?
Find him.
This isn't just a game. I'm talking about actual life and death stuff.
The Oasis, the world's most important economic resource.
And it's nothing less than a war
for control of the future.
Welcome to the rebellion, Wade.
Like many of you, I only came here to escape. But I found something much bigger than just myself. Are you willing to fight?
Help us save the Oasis.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot.
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, TV and film news this week. There's been a bunch of air date updates because I did a couple of these last week, but there's been a lot more since. As we mentioned earlier, Gotham has been picked up by E4 coming in April. So first time season 4 is being aired over here. Hopefully they'll run it through and we may get Gotham early next year. We may get season 5, assuming it gets renewed, which will be good. Hopefully that will be now settled as its new home. Timeless has also got an air date, season 2 of that. That's on E4 on the 4th of April. That's coming, which is only a few weeks after the US. So I'm very happy about that. Silicon Valley's got an air date now. That's coming on the 5th of April at 10 past 10 on Sky Atlantic. Patrick Melrose, which is his Benedict Cumberbatch series, that's coming to Sky Atlantic as well. That's on the 13th of May. Wolf Creek season 2 coming on the 3rd of April. That's got an air date now as well. Power has got a 6 seasons renewal. Murdoch Mysteries has got a 6 seasons renewal. Save Me's got a 2nd season renewal, the Lenny James series. You can tell we're heading into April, May and all the renewal stuff because they're all starting to come through. Marvel's Runaways has been picked up by Sci-Fi in the UK, coming 18th of April apparently. This is one I really look really interesting. Looks like another kind of interesting Marvel superhero show. I don't know.
There's
the
quite a
books.
Few of these different kind of ones they're putting together at the moment, where they're picking up some of the lesser known in the mainstream eyes kind of titles and putting them together into shows. So I'm interested to see how they go, because I think some of them are going to turn more into teen dramas.
Yes,
definitely.
I think this one definitely is be a teen drama because its main cast are teens. So yes, I think that looked like it could be quite good though. It's a Hulu series actually, but airing on Sci-Fi over here. Sci-Fi also picked up a show called Sirens, which is about sort of mermaids, a real kind of thing. And that's sort of a fantasy horror thing, but that's coming in May. And a show called Stitches, which is now cancelled in the US, but they've picked up, I think, two or three seasons of that, which was about somebody who has memories stitched in. It's basically iZombie without the zombies, by the sounds of it. That's coming later in the year, but we don't know exactly when yet. But that ran for 3 seasons, so don't get overly attached to it. In terms of bigger news this week, US network FX has ordered a sci-fi pilot from the writer-director Alex Garland. Alex Garland, if you don't know the name, there's a good chance you've seen some of his work, because he was the writer of The Beach, the novel which the Danny Boyle movie with Leonardo DiCaprio was based on. He then continued working with Danny Boyle as the screenwriter for 28 Days Later. He also wrote Sunshine. He wrote the screenplay for Dread, which starred Carl Urban, and he's probably the best adaptation of Dread we've seen on screen so far. Interestingly, Carl Urban actually said quite recently that he also pretty much directed that movie as well, despite it having been credited to another director, but he reckons that Garland was pretty much the director on it. But the first official credited movie as director is Ex Machina. So yeah, pretty well covered, I would say, that is Alex Garland, and has had critical acclaim with pretty much everything he's put his hand to so far. This pilot, which is the show, is called Devs. It's based around a young computer engineer called Lily, who's investigating a secretive development division of her employer. She works for a cutting-edge tech firm based in San Francisco, which she believes is behind the disappearance of her boyfriend. I mean, it doesn't give an awful lot away, that, but given that he has such a stunning track record so far, I'm very interested to see this, I think.
Yeah, I think the idea that they're looking at more things that push what it means to be human, and the word technology used many times so far, I think that's something that's probably going to get me to, you know, have a look at it when it comes out.
Yeah, I think so, definitely. Does look like it could be quite interesting, that one. He's just coming off the back of directing his second, writing and directing his second movie, which which is called Annihilation, which has been extremely well received so far. I think it's on Netflix, that, but it seems to have been fairly well received. The Devs pilot is part of an overall deal he has with FX Productions, so and it's going to be 8 episodes as well, apparently, assuming it gets picked up, that is. But I think there's a fair chance of that, given his track record. Moving on, we've got news that Titans, the TV series, which is coming to DC's new streaming service, which still has yet to be named, this new live-action version of Titans, but there was an episode title which caught people's interest, because the 7th episode of the series is apparently called Jason Todd. And for those of you that don't know your DC history, Jason Todd was the second Robin, and who eventually becomes the Red Hood. Given that the show is about Dick Grayson leaving Batman behind and leaving presumably Robin behind and turning into Nightwing, this sort of makes sense that maybe this is where they introduce Jason Todd as Robin Mark II, I would say. I doubt we're seeing Red Hood in this, because that would be way too early, I think, to do that. But yeah, we could get a Jason Todd Robin, which could be quite interesting, because Jason Todd was fairly impetuous of Robin compared to Dick Grayson.
I think it could be a really interesting series. I quite like Titans, and the characters in it are all kind of people that don't necessarily get enough of the spotlight normally, and I think it definitely could be an interesting one. I'm intrigued to see how they're going to have Jason Todd in the mix with that, and where they're going to go with it, being that we know what happens to Jason Todd in the end.
Yeah, they've not actually said that they've cast a Batman in this yet, although you've got to assume that there is at least going to be a Bruce Wayne at some point, you would think. I mean, I know it's about him getting away from him, unless they're going to do what they did with Supergirl in season one and sort of have him off in a distance. But I wonder if they will actually cast somebody as either Batman or Bruce Wayne, or obviously both, but whether we'll see both, I don't know.
Maybe they'll just have a mobile phone ringing and it'll say Bruce and he'll just not answer it. And that'll be
yeah, maybe.
That'll be it. Yep, you've got away from it then. Yeah, I almost don't want it to be too Batman.
No.
It's a Batverse series, it's not a Batman series. And I think there's the worry with these things. When you start including a primary title character in someone else's series, like when you start putting sort of Superman into Supergirl, it does start to overshadow, because it's just a better known character, and people that will be then thinking that character's going to be more integral than they are. And so I'm kind of hoping there isn't too much Batman in it.
Yeah, I mean, they actually handled it quite well in the second season, when they eventually did cast a Superman in the second season of Supergirl. They handled it quite well, as he popped in for a couple of episodes and then popped out again, and occasionally has kind of shown up. But they've pretty much sort of, I think they handled it quite well. That sort of level of interaction, I think, could work quite well. So yeah, we don't know what's going to happen with that DC direct to consumer digital service yet. Assuming the DC digital service is worldwide, then it will be on there. If not, hopefully the Titan series will get picked up by somebody over here. So next, the last little bit of news is there was a bunch of casting update recently. Few little things. Sabrina the Teenage Witch, this series that's based on the chilling adventures of Sabrina that we've been talking about various sort of on and off for the last few months. They've cast Harvey Kinkle, which is Sabrina's boyfriend, the sort of jock type character, described as the Prince Charming of the dark fairy tales. He's a son of a coal miner, a dreamboat, a dreamer, completely unaware of the dark forces conspiring to keep him and Sabrina apart. He's been played by Ross Lynch, who I'm way too old to know who he is, but apparently he was in a Disney musical sitcom called Austin and Ally. He then went on to play Jeffrey Dahmer, the serial killer in My Friend Dahmer, which, I mean, talk about picking two roles which couldn't be further apart.
Yeah, well, assuming he did both of those well, I've not seen either. That means he's got some range as an actor.
Certainly, yes. He's also lead vocalist and rhythm guitarist in a rock pop band called R5 as well, apparently. But so he's Ross Lynch is the guy's name. Apparently he's playing Harvey Kinkle. Nina Dobrev from the Vampire Diaries, she is now got a new role, and she's having a bit of a switch as well, because she's going from sort of teen drama to comedy. She's starring in a new multi-camera comedy which comes from the Newsroom writer Corinne Kingsbury. Follows Clem, played by Dobrev, a young woman who dreams of an upstanding life with her new fiance. After years of being a hot mess, she's worked hard to get her life back on track. She finally feels things are going how they should be. As part of portraying this best version of herself, she's told everybody her estranged father, Freddie Banks, is dead, except he's very much alive. And when her train wreck of a younger half-sister, Shannon, who's played by Odessa Adlon from Nashville, shows up trying to escape their equal train wreck of a father, her life is going to be exposed to everybody, putting her perfect life with Jay and his upstanding in-laws in serious jeopardy. I mean, as a pitch for a sitcom, it just sounds very American sitcom to me. It doesn't sound particularly interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest, and to me that sounds awful.
Yeah, I mean, of all the things to go through after being in such a big show, I can understand one wanting to maybe get away from doing that sort of teen drama kind of thing, but I'm not convinced. I mean, you know, a writer from The Newsroom is great, although she was a writer on The Newsroom. I don't think she was like the lead writer or anything on The Newsroom. So I don't know, but I'm not inspired by that write-up at all. There doesn't seem to be anything particularly interesting in there. I mean, I like Nina Dobrev. She's lovely actress for everything I can see, but yeah, not overly inspired, but we'll see where that goes. It's only a pilot at the moment, see if it goes to series. And lastly, they've found their new Cagney and Lacey over CBS. Cagney and Lacey, for those of you that are too young to know, it was a 80s cop drama, and they've moved from New York, which the original series was set in, to LA, because it's probably easier to shoot in LA, I would have thought at this point. It's written by Bridget Carpenter, who wrote 11-22-63, Parenthood and Friday Night Lights. The two cops are being played by Sarah Drew, who is playing Cagney, who was played by Sharon Gless in the original series. She's the more experienced of the two partners. And Detective Lacey, who was played by Tyne Daly in the original, is played by Michelle Hurd. Lacey's described as empathic, straightforward, athletic, polished, and a former high school track and field champion. So the two actresses, Sarah Drew was previously on Grey's Anatomy before being unceremoniously dumped after a major cast shakeup following having been on there for 9 years. She was also on Everwood, she was on Mad Men, she popped up in an episode of Supernatural as well. So she's kind of been around various shows. Michelle Hurd, you may recognise from various US procedural dramas. She played Renee Grover in Hawaii 5-0, Gina Santos in Lethal Weapon. She was Shepherd in Blindspot, which was a fairly major role. She's appeared in various other things. She was also in Daredevil. She was District Attorney Samantha Rees in Daredevil.
It seems very much like they have just purchased a licence for something and they're going to make something completely different. I mean, Cagney and Lacey, to me, was just, I feel like it was a kind of this iconic, famous 80s police thing, because we didn't have as many different police things to choose from.
Yeah.
At the time, I never felt Cagney and Lacey was anything particularly special. If they were announcing a remake of Knight Rider, I'd be much more kind of, you know, interested in it. Cagney and Lacey's just, it's just a cop show, so it makes it impossible to tell what this is really going to be, because they've obviously, they want the license, they want the name and the basic premise, but the premise is quite generic. So what they make from it, I really couldn't tell from this what exactly it's going to be like at all.
It's sort of the cop show that led all other sort of female-led cop shows. I mean, you know, things like Rizzoli and Isles is very much inspired by things like Cagney and Lacey, you know. So, yeah, I'm very much with you. They've kind of bought the name. And I mean, it's CBS. They're also doing, obviously, a Magnum remake. They're the same people that did Hawaii 5-0. They've done MacGyver. I mean, you know, they're the people that have rewritten every single kind of...
They went to an auction and bought a job lot.
I mean, they were CBS shows, I think, originally, probably, which is why. So they're just recycling their old licenses. But they have got, so they've got this piloting and they've got Magnum piloting this season. Those are their two big remakes this year. So yes, I don't know. I mean, as you say, in this day and age, it does feel like a bit of another generic cop show. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But yeah, it is coming. Well, it may be coming. It's being piloted at the moment. We should get all the information on renewals and cancellations by the end of May. So we've only got a couple more months to wait until we get a huge flurry of activity in what's being picked up and what's being cancelled and what are the new things that are going to be coming in the autumn. So keep an eye out for that, because they'll be popping up on the site over the next few months. That's all the news for this week. Next up, we have the interview. The interview this week is with Lee Kemp, who is the director on a Star Wars fan film project called Padawan Rising, a Star Wars short film. It's currently up on Kickstarter. It's going fairly well so far, but still needs more donations. So I wanted to get Lee on because it looks like a brilliant, brilliant project. The visuals they've done so far are absolutely beautiful. It's a really interesting story. So I wanted to get Lee on to talk a little bit more about the project, you know, his work and the people involved with it. So here's Lee Kemp. He's the director of Padawan Rising. We'll see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. Hi, Lee.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Thank you for spending a bit of time to talk on the podcast. Do you want to just explain a little bit about who you are and the film that you're kickstartering at the moment?
Of course. Thank you. First of all, thank you for having me on. My name's Lee Kemp. I am a filmmaker. I have been a filmmaker for over 10 years now, having had a previous career in the army. Wanted to go and do something completely different. So I work for a company called Vermilion Films based in Birmingham. And we mostly make commercials, promotional films, you know, that kind of stuff. And we've had this Star Wars fan film project that we've been working on for over 2 years now. And we are working towards raising the finance to get that made at the moment on Kickstarter.
Cool. So do you want to explain a little bit what the film is about?
Sure. Okay. So our main protagonist is a what I'm describing as a gap year Jedi, which is basically, that's a very British term, but she is someone who's coming to the end of her training, who is incredibly talented, very powerful, but is also wrestling with that sense of power and a little bit of entitlement that comes with and all that kind of stuff. Basically, she's just a bit too big for her britches. And she has been sent off on her own to do mundane tasks just to teach her a sense of responsibility. And it's not all fighting and sword play with a lightsaber. And while she's there, she is on a planet that gets invaded by what is slowly becoming the First Order. So we're in that transitional period between Jedi and Force Awakens, in which the after the Imperial remnants have fled after the events of Jedi, but before they've properly become the First Order.
Right.
And so they have arrived in force en masse and are investigating something on this planet. She finds herself down there while they effectively invade. And she has found the fight that she's looking for, but realizes it might be a little bit more than she can handle. But there are also other people on the planet that she doesn't know about. And she ends up enlisting their help to help her get off the planet and get word out, basically. So we have a really interesting character who learns quite a lot over the course of the film. She's this immensely powerful, impetuous Jedi Padawan, not quite completed her training, and she gets into a big, big fight with many more people than she can handle. And she has to learn to be better than she is.
You're directing the project, assuming he gets all the funding you need. You'll be directing the project. Who else have you got involved?
So we've got a whole bunch of interesting people. So the director of photography is a guy called Carl Poyser, who's been working with me for 6-7 years now. We've shot all over the world together, and it was actually due to him that the project came about in the first place. We have a wonderful production designer called James Blakemore Hoy. He's, if you've seen the Kickstarter video, he's the one with the lightsaber tattooed on his arm. So if you think the crew are not committed to Star Wars in some way, then you know you're obviously missing James's lightsaber tattoo. And the very first time I met James, he had heard about the project through Carl. We had never so much as spoken on the phone or anything like that. The very first time I met him to talk about the project, he turned up with about 20 pages of sketches and designs and things that he'd done just because he loved the idea so much.
Wow.
Our composer is a guy called Kevin Riepel, who's based in LA.
Yes, that's the name I know. Yes.
Excellent. Okay, so Kevin and I have worked together previously. So he scored my very first short film, which was called Not Very Nice People, which we made in 2014. And he has just completed the score for a TV show called Atropa, which has just been released. And prior to that, he did Ruin, which was a very well-known short film directed by Wes Ball before Wes Ball went on to direct all three of the Maze Runner movies. He wrote the music for Gears Gears of War, which I think most people listening to this will have heard of, and
yes, definitely.
Alien Colonial Marines and other games and stuff, you know. So, and one of the great things, I mean, you can read about this on the Kickstarter, but one of the great things about working with Kevin, because we were talking to a couple of composers, so we have an animatic for a key visual effects sequence that we have, which is a really big thing that's going to be a major part of the film. And this is when the First Order first land their stormtroopers on the planet. They do it in a very aggressive manner, like kind of shock troops sort of thing. And I had put three different pieces of music to that animatic, and I accidentally mislabeled them. So when I said to Kevin, you know, I like this one, I think we should go in this direction, I mislabeled it. It was just the Imperial March, I think, something like that. And he went, you know, that's cool, but that's a bit samey. What about this other one over here, which is really left field? And that was actually the one I wanted. So we found out we were just completely on the same page, just purely by accident, you know, and he's interested in doing something, you know, still Star Wars, but a little bit bold, a little bit different. Because I believe if you're going to ask people for money for something like this, then you can't just rock up and do something that other people have done before. You know, I think you've got to add something. You've got to be respectful to the universe, and you've got to, you know, you're playing in the Star Wars toy box to a certain extent. You know, you can't ruin it for other people, yeah. But you've got to add something new to it. You've got to do something interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing doing a project like this and raising money for a project like this, because there is so much Star Wars stuff around, but there is a sort of long tradition of Star Wars fan films. Certainly when Lucasfilm were fully in control. Have Disney been okay with the fan film stuff still as well?
They haven't come kicking my door down yet. I know, because when Disney took over the franchise, there was quite a lot of deep concern on the internet and amongst the fan community, particularly filmmakers, that this would be the end of Star Wars fan films as a genre. So what's happened so far really is Disney have certainly embraced the formal fan film ideology. J.J. Abrams ran a fan film competition,
right,
and invited people in, but they had to be under a certain length and all this kind of thing, and we weren't, basically.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't have been able to tell the amazing story we've got within the confines of that fan film competition. The informal stuff, I mean, there are, as you know, there are tons and tons of them out there. Many of them have been made since Disney took over the franchise, and I haven't heard of a single fan film being taken down because of copyright infringements. So
yeah.
I'm hopeful that this will continue to be the case. And I think, you know, there's sort of an unspoken thing that kind of people abide by, that so long as you're respectful of the universe and you don't try and do anything foolish, then I think they're sort of okay with it, because everybody gets how much, like, they get how much the community loves Star Wars.
Yeah, I think that's very true. It's an interesting time period you've picked out as well, because it's not necessarily an area that's known very much about. And you've also inserted a Jedi in there, which I know might upset people somewhere,
sure,
because of the whole, oh, Jedis aren't supposed to be around. Although, you know, you have got Luke out there starting up new
somewhere.
Jedis at this point.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe you're not going in to explain where she actually comes from, other than she's obviously has a master somewhere that sent her off here, but who that is. Yeah.
She is, in the conversations I've had, I've deliberately avoided answering that question exactly.
Yeah.
But I would say she is definitely a highly force sensitive individual who has received some kind of training from someone who is immensely good with a lightsaber. You know, so and in terms of the, you know, is she a member of Luke's Jedi Temple? I don't know, she could be. Are there Jedis around in this period? Well, theoretically none that we know of.
Yeah.
But obviously Luke's kicking around there somewhere. Does the story take place in the cinematic universe, or does it, you know, there's various timelines going on at the moment, isn't it? So,
yeah.
And we've definitely opted for, we've picked some bits of technology from the extended universe as well.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, and as you know, there's a couple of Jedis and Star Wars Rebels and that kind of stuff. So I think, I mean, interestingly, I've had two very long emails from fans who've picked up on stuff that is not completely canonical just in the Kickstarter film.
Which is about a minute long, that film.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's crazy.
So one of the things we wanted to do in the Kickstarter film was, because you've never seen the code cylinders actually be used.
Right,
and
yeah.
So what we've done is we've had an officer take one out and he inserts it into a holo projector and we see some plans and stuff like that. And I got a long, long email about uniforms in the original trilogy versus uniforms in the Abrams era stuff. And we'd got a guy, a lovely guy called Pete Billups, who's he's a member of UK Garrison.
Yeah.
He's got an Imperial costume and we adapted it to put it in that sort of transitional period of which there are not too many records. So, you know, so we've partially done it that way to incorporate a degree of ambiguity, just to give us some room to maneuver for that sort of stuff. But also because now this bit's going to be quite spoiler heavy. and we found a really interesting narrative way to pit aging Imperial stormtroopers against First Order stormtroopers, and that's a big part of our story.
Yeah.
So that's sort of why it has to be in that period as well.
Yeah, which I think is a really interesting idea. I really quite like that idea. The Kickstarter finishes on 3rd of April. You're about a third way funded at the moment.
Yeah, 34%.
That's not bad going so far, but you obviously need people to pitch in. Do your big sale now.
Right, okay. We came out of the gates really, really strong, and we've had tons and tons of great support from lots of people that I know, friends and family and all that kind of stuff, but we've had total strangers commit £750 to us. You know, that's about $1,000, that kind of stuff. I mean, that's absolutely brilliant. But what, interestingly, we haven't landed in the Star Wars community in quite the way that I expected to. So what people will get out of this is, first of all, we have a great story. You know, we have a genuinely, everybody that I have pitched the full story to in real life has A, absolutely loved it, and B, given us money almost immediately. And I'm caught between that being very spoiler free, but also trying to give people as much information as they can. But what you will get at the end of this, in terms of whatever reward you choose to pledge to, is just 15 minutes of super, super high level, beautifully shot, well acted, well thought out Star Wars story. And I think a lot of fan films just, you know, really enjoy getting the costumes in front of the camera and all that kind of stuff. We've got a narrative, we've got great characters, we've got some immense CGI and VFX. I've had volunteers from recently a guy who's currently in Montreal working on Fantastic Beasts 2. Saw it. He's volunteered himself because people just want to help. So this, we're not aiming to make a Star Wars fan film. We're aiming to make the Star Wars fan film. Our target, the highest number of views I've seen is about 16 million, and we want to beat it.
Right. Good.
So if people want to be part of that, if people want to help us get this off the ground, then that's what they're getting involved with. I think you can see from the campaign, from the stuff that we've shot, you know, we're good at what we do. My team, everybody on the team is better at their job than I am at my job. So, you know, it is a really high level, committed bunch of people who absolutely love this story that we're trying to bring to the screen. That was a bit longer than a 60 second pitch, but
you're fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think we need about 730 people to pitch at the £25 level at the moment. Yeah. And they say 90% of projects that reach 80% of their funding make it all the way. So,
right.
So I'm aiming for if I can get up to about 22,000 by sort of Saturday, Sunday, which is a big leap. Don't get me wrong, I understand that, but yeah, we are doing this big push.
Well, you know how much of a fan, because I've told you before how much of a fan of this I am. So I'm very much looking forward to hopefully getting this fully funded. There'll be a link on our site as well, or it's called Padawan Rising, a Star Wars short film, so you can go find it on Kickstarter as well. I really, really hope you get this funded, because I think it's a wonderful idea.
Thank you very much. You can, if you go to padawanrising.com, that will take you straight to the Kickstarter site.
Okay.
We were picked by Kickstarter the other day as one of their projects we love, so we've seen an increased amount of attention from that. Everybody that we've talked to, everybody who's seen all of the materials that we've produced, stuff like that, has got involved in some way. So right now we're just trying to get the word out as far and as wide as possible. And another thing, I think a lot of people who do Kickstarters now have come to learn that it's way harder these days than it was sort of 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think that's to a certain extent the fault of a lot of filmmakers who haven't delivered on their pledges and their promises and rewards and all that kind of stuff. The end product hasn't been very good.
Yeah.
I make films for a living. I work in the commercial world. My team deliver stuff where it needs to go on time. So a pledge for a pledge, basically. We absolutely will get you the stuff that you have asked for, you know, and we'll get it to you in a timely fashion. That's very much something that we are committed to, because it's not just a case of taking the pledges and running. You know, we want to give you the stuff back. We want you to be engaged with the process as we go. One of the great things about being a director on a project like this, because we have a couple of perks, for example, and we haven't seen this anywhere else, where we will share with a small audience an early draft of the film and get your feedback. So you get to be a part of the test audience.
Oh, cool.
And then once the film is almost complete, there's another pledge where you can do a later version of the film. And so one of the great things about being a director in this industry is that you get to not only steal other people's ideas, you get to take credit for them as well. you know, so because ultimately it's your name that's attached to it. So if you want to be a collaborative part of this process, we're a very collaborative team. So yeah. We're interested to hear from people.
Awesome. Well, good luck with it. I hope it goes really well.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you too.
Okay. All right. Cheers.
Bye. So that was the interview with Lee Kemp. The link was padawinerising.com. You can just punch that in. It'll take you straight through for the Kickstarter page, or just look for Padawine Rising on Kickstarter. There's also a link in the show notes on our website as well. So go and have a look at it. It looks fantastic. Closes on the 3rd of April. So you've got a bit of time to do it yet, assuming you're listening in the week that we release this podcast. It looks like a great project, and I really like to see it get it funded, because I really want to see the film. So go help them out, padawinerising.com. Now here's some highlights for next week on TV. So highlights for next week on TV. We've got a bunch of stuff coming back and a couple of interesting new shows as well. Supergirl finally returns. That's on the 26th of March at 8 p.m. Are you still watching all the DC shows?
I'm watched Flash. I've seen some bits of Legends. I kind of stopped watching Arrow because it became far too much. Are they getting married or not? I liked Felicity to start with, but the whole relationship, I'm just less and less interested in the whole show. Supergirl, I did watch a reasonable amount of the first season, but it was too kind of silly. The only episodes I really liked were the kind of Flash crossovery ones.
Yeah.
But now it has obviously moved and it's very much embedded as a CW show. It might well be worth me taking another look at it.
Yeah, I think it massively improved when it went over to CW. They really did a nice job with it and ironed out a lot of the kinks with it for its second season. So third season is coming on the 26th of March for the second half of that season. I know it seems very late this year, but it was late back in the US as well. So we're actually, by the time that the US start airing it again, we will only be 1 week behind, same as usual. It's taken a while to come back, but that's the US's fault, not ours. So, we're 26th of March at 8 p.m. for that. Billions, that's back for its third season, 29th of March at 9 p.m. That's a fantastic show. Lots of Machiavellian politics and finance stuff going on with that. It's highly entertaining. Suits back for the second half of season 7, which is a great, great series. Going to be the last one for Patrick and Meghan Markle, because they're both leaving. One of them's going off to marry some former soldier who happens to be attached to a big house in London. Yes, she's.
You won't say which one, you'll leave that as a mystery.
Yeah. That's back, and then it's going through a little bit of a revamp when it comes back for its 8th season. I think it's already been picked up for its 8th season, I seem to remember. So they've got some new people coming in, and it's going to be interesting to see it without like two of their main cast there. But
they managed to keep making plot after what seemed to be the primary reason for all character motivations changing. So they might actually be able to pull it off. Yeah. I'm interested to see where they go with it. It will either continue to be brilliant or it will take a nosedive. But the writing so far has managed to keep the season series alive so well.
Yeah, it's the writing that keeps it together, I think, that on that show. And as you say, I think Mike's plotline has sort of run its course at this point. And, you know, the unique thing about him having the eidetic memory is, I mean, that's still used very occasionally as a sort of widget, occasionally when they need it. But mostly it's just a show about brilliant lawyers. And it's a very, very well-written show about brilliant lawyers. So
I'd happily have a whole season with Lewis as the main character.
Yes, yeah, he's wonderful, that guy. So he's a great invention. So I think it'll be fine when it comes back for its next season. But 29th of March, that's back on Netflix for that. In the Long Run, which is a comedy starring Idris Elba, loosely based on his childhood. This has been trailered all over the place on Sky One. That's coming on the 29th of March at 10 p.m. I might give this a watch just out of curiosity, in all honesty, because it's a half-hour sitcom with Idris Elba, which is very strange.
I mean, I quite like The Goldbergs, partly because it's 80s and there's lots of things you can relate to. So it's... It is a format that works because you can tell when these shows are made with love.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. I have no idea what that'll be like, but 29th of April at 10 p.m. if you want to have a look at that. Lemony Snicket's Series of Unfortunate Events Season 2, that's coming on the 30th of March to Netflix. I adored the first season of this. It's wonderfully strange, twisted adaptation of the Lemony Snicket novels. Neil Patrick Harris is amazing as Count Olaf. Just thoroughly enjoyable in all its horrendous tragedy. Can't recommend that highly enough. Really, really love the first season of that show, so I'm very much looking forward to that coming back. Modern Family is back for the third part of its ninth season. They've been splitting things up a lot. 30th of March at 8:30 p.m. Episodes is back for its fifth and final season, coming to BBC Two on 30th March at 10 p.m. We've waited forever for this, but I'm very, very happy it's finally airing. Stephen Mangan, Tadsman Greg and Matt LeBlanc back for the fifth season of that. And then there is a new thing called Kiss Me First, which is starting on Channel 4 on the 2nd of April at 10 p.m. It's a thriller based on a novel which combines live action with state-of-the-art computer-generated virtual world sequences. So it's basically a sort of mixed in with a video game. It's about a girl who escapes into this video game, which is quite appropriate given that they're releasing Ready Player One this week as well. So quite...
The Kiss Me First teaser trailers are awesome. I'm assuming it's connected to some of the same team that did Humans, because they had these kind of teaser trailers where they pretended it was a real advert for The Simps, and then the Kiss Me First ones have the teaser trailers that are pretending they're a real advert for the VR.
Yeah.
So I do like that kind of approach, and that always kind of piques my interest, where it's something where they haven't really told me anything about the show, but they've given me an idea of the world with these little teaser trailers. So I'm quite interested to see that one.
Yeah, there have been a couple of longer teasers that have got kind of a bit more about the show in them. But yeah, those initial teasers were very, very reminiscent of the what they did with Humans. So I'm really intrigued to see this. It looks like it could be quite a good show. It's called Kiss Me First. It's on Channel 4. It's 2nd of April at 10 p.m. for that, but could be one worth checking out. And that's it for this week, unless you've got anything else.
No, I think we've covered pretty much everything. I just want to go back and play with my lightsaber standing on top of more castles, to be honest. That's it really, with a better Wi-Fi connection so I don't miss as much telly.
Yeah, that would be nice. You can find Bex at
Trista Bytes. That's YouTube, Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. And it's Trista Bytes, spelt B-Y-T-E-S, because I am doubly geeky, and obviously you can find me here on the Geektown Radio podcast as well.
Yes, and for us, you can find us at geektown.co.uk the rest of the week, which will have lots of news and air date info. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, you can email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk, leave a message on the website post, find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at Geektown UK. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.